It's Friday night, you're young and free. What do? That depends on what decade we're talking about and whether you're from a city, a small town, or rural Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Iowa Week. All week long, we've been exploring different aspects of Iowa then and now. This hour, Iowa on the weekend. Historian Leo Landis will be here, and we'll talk about drive-in movie theaters and restaurants, music through the years, amusement parks, hanging out at the mall, and so much more. We also want to hear from you. What did you do on the Friday and Saturday nights of your youth? Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is the final day of Iowa Week. All week long on Talk of Iowa and River to River, we've been exploring different aspects of Iowa then and now. And you can find all of the shows that you may have missed on our website, iowapublicradio.org. Look for the Iowa Week link. This hour, we're talking about Iowa on the weekend, and we really want to hear your memories. What did you do on a Friday or Saturday night when you were younger? Where was your favorite place to go on a date? What was your favorite amusement park, ballroom, restaurant? Share your memories. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me this hour is Leo Landis. He is the curator of the State Historical Museum. Leo, welcome back to the show.
It's fabulous to be with you, Charity.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And we're going to do a lot of reminiscing this hour. And I think it would be fun to start with one of those big weekend destinations. Small amusement parks used to be a lot more common around, not just around Iowa, but all over the place. But Iowa had a lot more of them than we do now, right?
We sure did. And there were fun places, and places like the Riverview is one in Des Moines that folks know, of course. And in Burlington, you had around Crapo Park, an amusement park that was active into the 1990s at least, that had roller coasters and places for folks in western Iowa. They could go over to Peony Park in Omaha. And one of the more interesting stories was more both an amusement park, but also just kind of a recreation area that the Waterloo Parks and Recreation had put together, called Robinson Crusoe Island Park. And it was on an island in the Cedar River. And the folks in Waterloo could, especially young folks, if you were a teenager or a young adult or a child, you could explore the wrecked ship of Robinson Crusoe. You could swing from giant rubber vines, which I think is probably a liability lawyer's nightmare today.
Yeah.
and those sorts of activities. So those are the sorts of things that in a you know, good size urban community you could do.
And a couple of years ago, my husband and I went and did the sky tour at the YMCA camp in Dubuque, which used to be Union Park. And that was one of those amusement parks, too. They had a light rail line that went out to this park, and a huge pavilion and all kinds of really amazing attractions. It seems to me that safety was a smaller concern in those days than it is now.
That's right. And we even still have great parks around, like Arnold's Park, that have stuck around up in Northwest Iowa and the Great Lakes region of Iowa. So places like Dubuque and across the state had those wonderful places that, if you just needed, you know, mostly safe, fun recreation, they were the perfect places to go.
Mostly safe. Well, and of course, I mean, there are still amusement parks. You mentioned Arnold's Park, which is kind of, it is a great place to go and enjoy yourself. But also there's a lot of nostalgia for a lot of people involved in going there because it has been going for so long. We also have Adventureland. And of course, Adventureland started when I was a kid. So amusement parks are still a big part of the weekend for Iowans, but they're something you drive a lot farther to get to.
That's right. We really only have Adventureland and Arnold's Park in Iowa for the most part now. And some folks, you know, if you live in the Dubuque area, you might go over to Chicago, or if you're in north central Iowa, you might go up to Shakopee, or in southern Iowa down to Worlds of Fun in Kansas City. So the automobility and the interstates have really made it a lot easier to get to those larger parks.
Something that I enjoy looking at old pictures of at local museums, that kind of thing, are swimming pools or places where people went swimming, because sometimes there would be large gatherings on a river or something like that where it's been sort of roped off for swimming and it was the destination for everybody in town. It seems like swimming pools were a really vital part of a lot of communities.
They certainly were, and again, that's part of the unstructured recreation, and you know, now they're water parks, and that's fabulous for families today. But every community that wanted to put itself on the map in the baby boom era needed to have a swimming pool. So if it wasn't at a state park, as you said, or at a river that had a section roped off for swimming, you would have a municipal swimming pool in your community, where that was, you know, the best place to be in the summer on a hot day, no matter what age you were. If you were a teenager and you know wanted to meet boys or girls, or just a young person to get out of the heat, if you didn't have air conditioning in your farmhouse or in your urban or rural house.
Well, and I think one of the other differences, people obviously still go to swimming pools and these water parks that we have in so many places, and the hybrids that we have in a lot of communities, if we're lucky. But going to the pool, now, when I was a kid in the 70s and early 80s, was a much more independent experience. I think I was probably dropped off at the pool with my brothers starting at age 5, and then I would go to the pool with friends independently at 7 or 8.
And I think that was pretty typical I know that was the typical experience for most Iowa children from the 1950s into the early 1990s, at least. And I don't know what caused that change, to be honest, whether it was the beginning of more structured and maybe some of the fears that developed in the 1980s about, you know, keeping an eye on your children and the 24-hour news cycle. And unfortunately, here in Iowa, we had two newspaper carriers that were abducted and or disappeared, and we don't know what happened to them. And parents became a little more conscious, I think, of keeping an eye on your children, as opposed to in the 70s and 80s, where it's like, okay, dropping the kids off at the pool, we'll send somebody else's parents back to pick them up at 3:30, and here's, you know, $2 to spend on pop and concessions.
Well, and I also remember that the character of the pool changed throughout the day. So kids were there, although we did have adult swim, which I think we all had a hard time with. but as the day went on, then teenagers would start showing up as dusk started approaching.
And I think it could depend on community just how things, you know, developed at pool to pool, but there certainly was a kind of culture of where teens might swim versus where younger children might swim. So I know in central Iowa, you had places like Peterson Pits up in Ames area. In Des Moines, there was a place called Clearwater Beach on the west side of West Des Moines that's now another kind of establishment. But those were places where, you know, you'd listen to the album Rock Station being blasted out of some concession stand in the 1970s and early 80s, and that was where you hung out if you were a teenager. It wasn't as much as the municipal pool sometimes in larger communities.
So talking about a lot of these places where people would go on the weekends, it strikes me that a lot of it has to do with the freedom that cars gave us. Is that a point where really the weekend culture began to come alive for a lot of communities when cars were common?
No doubt about it, Charity. I think as you saw the World War II era end and more families, even in rural communities, you know, Saturday night was the night to come into town. Even before the war, that was the case. But if you were a rural person or an urban person, but more so rural people, after the war, when there was so much more disposable income, it was going to town, going to a movie, experiencing the amenities that town had versus being out on your farm. And up until 1960, Iowa was still predominantly a rural state. So that was part of the aspect of it, was getting a chance to come into town as a rural person with automobiles and a family.
Well, we'll talk more about car culture as we go on, because there were so many different aspects to that. We want to hear your memories as well. 866-780-9100. When you got your first set of keys, your first set of wheels, where did you go? Where did you like to spend Friday or Saturday night? 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Paul is on the line in Story City. Hi, Paul.
Hello. How are you, Charlie?
Good. What are your memories?
Well, my memories pertain to small-town life on Saturday night in the 50s. But prior to mentioning that, I want to look back in the early 70s. I had a Leo Landis on my flag football team at the West Suburban YMCA. Were you there, Leo?
That was me.
Yeah, see, I was team sports director. That was my part-time job, and Leo was a pretty good-sized third and fourth grader. I used him as a blocker, and the Giants won almost all their games.
So. Oh, terrific.
You're Thank you, Leo.
Days of glory for Leo. Well, let's return to the 1950s, then, and Saturday night.
I grew up in Story City, and I think it's probably commensurate with experience in all small towns. Saturday night was festive. There was no parking available. The kids were all in the theater watching the movie. All the adults were grouped in conversation groups up and down the street, greasy popcorn. And then those of us in the high school band had to continue all summer because we had a big bandstand and we did a weekly concert while being eaten by mosquitoes. And then that died. Television just killed that. Almost overnight, that disappeared. Big Saturday nights in small town Iowa. We lost a sense of community in that respect, I think.
So you, in the summertime, I'm guessing you're just talking about the summertime, because
in
the winter, everybody would have been freezing. But people were just standing around on the street, just visiting?
Yeah, that was just, it was like the festivals you have in small towns now. Like we have Scandinavian Days once a year in early June. Every Saturday night was like that. People just talked and conversed. And then I remember one night, all the men were grouped outside of the plate glass window at the hardware store watching a test pattern on TV. And that was ominous because, if you remember, in the 50s, the night Lucy had her baby, church meetings were canceled, council meetings were canceled all over the country because Lucy was having her baby. And that's when I realized the impact of television.
And, of course, you're talking about I Love Lucy.
I Love Lucy, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, you got to be old enough to know what I'm talking
right.
about.
Paul, thank you so much for sharing your memories with us.
Yes, and thanks to Leo for being a heck of a good blocker.
Thank you, Paul.
All right. Thank you so much for your call. We want to hear from you, too. We want to hear your memories this hour. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. All week long on Iowa Week, we've been talking about Iowa then and now. And right now we're talking about Iowa on the weekends then and now. We want to hear your memories. With me today, Leo Landis. He's curator of the State Historical Museum. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Well, she got her daddy's car and she cruised to the hamburger stand now. See, she forgot all about the library like she told her old man now. And with the radio blast and goes cruising just as fast as she can now. And she'll have fun, fun, fun till her daddy takes a T-Bird away. The Indy 500 look like a Roman chariot race.
You look like an ace, now you look like an ace.
A lot of guys try to catch her, but she leads them on a wild goose chase.
You drive like an ace, now you drive like an ace.
And she'll have fun, 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 till her daddy takes a T-Bird away. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Iowa Week on Talk of Iowa and River to River. And all week long, we've been talking about different aspects of Iowa then and now. Horticulture Day will be back on the air next Friday, but this hour we are talking about Iowa on the weekends, then and now. Leo Landis is here with me. He's the curator of the State Historical Museum, and we really want to hear your memories this hour. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Penny is on the line from Forstoria. Hi, Penny.
Yes.
Hi, you also have some Saturday nights in the 1950s memories, right?
Yes, a very small town in northwest Iowa, a grocery store with a tin roof and no air conditioning. So by Saturday night, when I worked as a clerk, the heat in that building was astronomical. And everyone came to town then, and the big event on Saturday night was a 9 p.m. drawing, at which time you had to be present in the store or one of the stores to win. And by that time on Saturday night in a hot summer, the air pollution in that building from sweaty bodies was so great, absolutely overwhelming, that I never since have worried about air pollution.
So what were the drawings for, Penny?
I think it was for probably $25, which was a big sum then. And in that store, I also pumped vinegar from a barrel, cut meat and cut up chickens. It was very old-fashioned, low-tech grocery business.
Now, 9 p.m. seems really late for me. It sounds like a tremendous business promotion, something to get people into the stores and, of course, spending money. But 9 p.m. is really late. Do you know why it was so late?
Because farmers had to get to town. You know, a lot of people worked until sunset. And basically, they were all revved up and ready to go at 9 o'clock. And they crowded into the store. They stood in rows in the store. They were picking up a few things for the weekend. Of course, there was nothing open on Sunday. And it was a rare memory. And I can still smell the odor of bodies sweating.
So, Penny, is it a good memory for you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is. And, of course, I was one of the sweaters, you know.
Right. I'm sure everybody was.
I had that job 5 days a week, or 6 days a week, and Saturday night. And so my summer was largely working, which is what my father believed teenagers should do. And he believed that sweating was a part of your education, and you should learn it.
And you did.
Yes.
Oh, Penny, thank you so much for calling and sharing.
Thank you. I enjoy your program.
Thanks a lot. Well, and Leo, Penny brings up an important fact, which is in a lot of these small towns that may not have even had a theater, although most of them did have a small theater, there may have, you had to make your own fun and find a place to go and gather, right?
That's exactly right. And I think Penny's reference to work is something that characterizes, I think, teens in Iowa and anybody who's grown up in Iowa. I think that's one of our distinctive natures of Midwestern life, is that we are still hard workers, and that's something that's expected. But if you were going to a small town that didn't have a theater, then that community nature of, you know, socializing with adults like Paul referenced and learning, you know, who to hang out with and where you could go and what you could do and what sort of promotions that the small stores, and that was not atypical. Movie theaters used to have things called bank nights where they would do a drawing, much like Penny talked about. So that was carried over then into the small towns to have some sort of promotional or premium giveaway in the small towns.
Now, when it became not only common for a family to have a car, but for young people to have at least access to the car or maybe even a car of their own, how did that change Friday and Saturday night?
I think what you saw with the rich rural culture that we have in Iowa and then, you know, great small size cities across the state would be the development of the franchise restaurant. And so places like King's Food Host that had establishments across the state, that would be a place where you could pull up and you placed your order at King's Food Hosts through a phone typically. And Waterloo had a King's Food Host. Des Moines had one. Ames had one. I believe there was one in Council Bluffs as well. So even if you were from a small town like Avoca or something, you could drive into Council Bluffs and go to a chain restaurant and hang out with other teenagers. Or if you were from Farley and you could drive into Dubuque and hang out, going to those chain restaurants that were developing, even pre-McDonald's, because they were more regional, like Henry's was a well-known hamburger joint in the 50s and 60s and into the early 70s. As McDonald's comes in, that becomes a little more typical, but it's fast food. It's not the hangout place like King's and Henry's.
The drive-in restaurants, do you think that they were more conducive to that kind of hangout culture because people were outside even if they were actually eating?
No doubt about it. It's part of the way they were set up versus a place like McDonald's, which was purely set up as fast food. And not that there was anything wrong with McDonald's. A lot of us have fond memories of that in the 60s and 70s and 80s and later in Iowa. But the way that the drive-in restaurants like King's or Henry's catered to young adults and the excitement of, I think that's part of our state that we've got this great road system, so if you are in a small town, you can get into a good-sized town within about a half hour. And again, that trust that parents put on most children was usually rewarded, and most of us behaved. So you had the culture of a drive-in like Henry's that allowed the socialization in a larger way than a place like a later fast food restaurant.
And of course, teenagers driving around and loitering in parking lots, that's still part of our culture today.
No doubt about it.
Wayne is on the line in Marshalltown. Hi, Wayne.
Good morning.
Hi, and we were just talking about car culture, and that's what you want to talk about, right?
Yeah, I actually was kind of surprised it took as long as it did to hear about it. We always called it scooping the loop in Marshalltown, and we would drive between restaurants or just drive probably really frustrating traffic because we'd be going really slow, talking to folks in other cars. You have three or four folks in your car, and that's how we socialized. Even then, we had the A&W root beer, we had a King's Food Host, and those were parking lots that we would congregate in, or the city park, or just empty downtown lots.
Well, and as I was just, we did that in the 1980s and the 1990s, too. I think scooping the loop is something, does that still happen?
I haven't seen it. Now, when my kids, I was in the late 60s, early 70s. My kids in the 2000s, 90s to 2000s, they would do what you were talking about, get to the parking lot and just congregate with their friends. Of course, gas was like 50 cents a
right.
gallon when I was doing it.
So it's a little easier to fill up that tank. Wayne, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
866-780-9100 is the number to call. Now, of course, teenagers really enjoyed scooping the loop and loitering in different places. That hasn't always been popular among other members of the community, having large packs of teenagers around.
And still isn't necessarily. I think that's part of the more formalization, too, that has happened with recreation in the 21st century is the idea that we need to structure everybody's time. As you become a teenager, you become more independent. But I think one of the things I've noticed in the last 15 years, not that anybody has studied it, but the urgency that I think teens of the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s had to get their license to drive was so much greater. And today, I think with the different aspects of what a teenager's life is, you don't need your driver's license like all of us, I think, thought of in the pre-2000
it's
era.
It's not your ticket to freedom like it once was. And actually, people have studied that. So I've read a whole book about it. This here's an email from David in Waukee. My favorite Friday night activity during my senior year in 1961, 1962 was drinking beer with my friends. We bought the beer with fake IDs after school and stashed it somewhere safe. After we'd participated in whatever sport was in season, we retrieved our beer and drank it while slowly cruising the gravel roads of Mitchell County. Those were the days, and I wouldn't trade them for anything. And we haven't talked about sports. Of course, that Friday night football game was a huge event for most teenagers and for adults too.
And that's with the baby boom era, where rural populations really took off. I think that the eight-man game of today still lets small towns have football teams, but still they're often consolidated teams. But in the 50s, 60s, 70s, the football culture was just as strong and a little bit different with basketball.
Because it was colder.
Exactly. I think you saw the same sort of community pride. And I know that relating to what was going on in Mitchell County, doing conversations with other folks of the 50s and 60s, that wasn't atypical for people in central Iowa or in, you know, small towns across the state, driving around slowly, mostly behaving yourself, but having a couple of alcoholic beverages when you were underage was not atypical.
We're talking about Iowa on the weekends then and now. We want to hear your memories. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Where did you like to go on the weekends? We're talking about car culture right now, but we also haven't talked about roller rinks yet. We need to talk about ballrooms and places to go to hear music. Where was your place to go dancing when you were a teenager or a young adult? Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Wilbur's on the line in Sioux City. Hi, Wilbur.
Good morning.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I wanted to talk about the Gordon Twin Drive-In out here in Sioux City. I think it was unique because I've never seen another drive-in that had two screens that faced each other with the concession stand in the middle. And then we used to have what they call Front Night. So you could get in for a dollar and pack as many kids in the car as you could enter. And, of course, we filled the trunk. And then once we got in, you know, everybody was on top of the car watching the movies.
Wilbur, thanks a lot for calling. And drive-in movie theaters were huge in Iowa, weren't they, Leo?
They were. We had over 80 drive-ins across the state at any one time. Cedar Rapids also had a twin drive-in just south of Highway 30, and I think it was just east of Highway 218, if I remember right. I know it was just south of 30. So the Gordon certainly was a unique one. There were a couple others in the state. And as I said, you could be in a larger town like Phil just mentioned in Sioux City, but towns like Pocahontas had drive-ins, Perry, Emmitsburg, and they would stay open late into the fall in many cases. So it much like you referenced Charity, once it got cold, that changed the way we enjoyed our weekends. But many drive-ins would stay open at least till early October and sometimes later.
Well, and it strikes me that the drive-in movie culture outlasted the drive-in theater, the drive-in theater culture outlasted the drive-in restaurant culture for the most part.
Exactly. I think you still saw, well, I know in central Iowa, you still had one or two drive-ins into the late 1980s. So children growing up in the 70s were used to doing that. And even some of the small town, the ranch drive-in in West Ames, the drive-in up in Mason City, in those mid-sized communities, they still persisted into the 1990s in many cases.
Well, earlier we were wondering if the scooping the loop culture still exists. This one's from Justin on Facebook. He said, in high school in the 2000s, we used to drive around and yell nonsense at people. Hey, you have a beautiful family. I really like your running shoes. Or the classic, ah! The level of entertainment increased dramatically when these activities occurred in the Merle Hay Mall parking lot. There just aren't a lot of free things to do in Iowa. I think that's a challenge faced by teenagers everywhere.
Exactly right.
not just filling the tank, but trying to do other stuff as well. And then, of course, going to a restaurant and ordering a soda and sitting there for 2 hours, I'm sure also is still popular on a Friday or Saturday night for teenagers. Jerry is on the line next. Hi, Jerry.
How you doing?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, first of all, I'm on the road headed to Des Moines because North High Class of 55 is having their 60th reunion.
Oh, that's great. Well, have a wonderful time.
Well, we're going to have a good time. But I'll tell you, what we like to do, the reason you scoop the loop was one reason, was to flirt with girls.
And were you successful?
Well, sometimes, you know, the girls came down to flirt with the guys, so it was okay. The other place we used to go was Birdland swimming pool. It was a great place. And the drive-in talk.
Oh, Jerry, I'm so sorry. You're breaking up on us.
I'm starting to get up the top of a hill. That's why I'm on the road here.
All right, try one more time about the drive-in.
Okay, Park Lane Drive-In at Forest and Harding Road was the place to go if you were in North High.
Well, Jerry, thank you so much. Have a great time at your reunion.
Okay, thank you much. Talking to you.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye. Well, and of course, being in a place with people your own age and having an opportunity to actually talk to them, that was something that a lot of teenagers and young adults are still in search of today. And I want to talk about roller rinks, because roller rinks used to be so much more popular and so much more common and really the place to go.
I know in post-World War II, so baby boom era, they had predated that time. They're actually an 1880s phenomena and a little bit earlier than that. But they really retook off in the 50s and 60s, and then by the 1970s, small communities like Tatanka in the 60s would set up roller rinks sometimes as a benefit for the 4-H or FFA group. So you'd have small towns, as I said, like Tatanka would have a roller rink in town. But then in larger communities, you'd have two or three. I know in Des Moines, which is my home area, we had Skate East, Skate West, I think Skate North, Skate South, and then Skate Country was the newcomer in the 70s. So Des Moines had at least five roller rinks. There was the J4 in Ames. They were, you know, that perfect place to go on a Friday night that, again, was maybe more of a preteen culture to a degree, but there were certainly teens there, too, in the 50s and 60s. And that's one, as you referenced, Cherry, that changes a little bit like swimming pools did.
Absolutely. And, of course, I remember from my early childhood, the roller rink seemed quite glamorous with the music and the lights. And as I got older, I think maybe my vision of it changed, but also they maybe weren't kept up as well, because it certainly began lacking in glamour as time went on. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about Iowa on the weekends, then and now. Here's one from my then to listen to as we go out to the break, and we'd love to hear from you as well. Leo Landis, curator of the State Historical Museum, is here with me today. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
I don't care if Monday's blue, Tuesday's gray, and Wednesday too. Thursday, I don't care about you. It's Friday, I'm in love. Monday, you can fall apart. Tuesday, Wednesday, break my heart. Oh, Thursday doesn't even start. It's Friday, I'm in love. Saturday, Sunday always comes too late, but Friday never hesitates. I don't care if Monday's black. Tuesday...
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're wrapping up Iowa Week on Talk of Iowa with Iowa on the Weekend, Then and Now. And we would love to hear from you. Share your memories. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. How did you spend your Friday and Saturday nights when you were younger? What is the restaurant you miss the most? What's the special thing about your community that you remember fondly? Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Bob is on the line in Tipton. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are we doing?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
In the 80s, growing up in Standwood, a small town, there wasn't much to do, but we did have Highway Gardens. There was a ballroom, and we'd go down there. We didn't care if it was someone's wedding reception or anniversary dance. You know, we'd just go down there just to dance.
So even if you weren't invited, so you were crashing these events a little
pretty
bit?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever get busted?
Oh, no. You know, they didn't mind. We sat off on, you know, by ourselves, you know, on the other side of the dance hall and stuff. And, yeah, it was always a good time. And sadly, now Highway Gardens is gone. They tore it down, I think, 10 years ago.
And were there also paid events there? We had in Cedar Falls, Waterloo area, we had Electric Park Ballroom, which is still there. But we rarely went there because often you had to pay to get in. And, of course, we never wanted to spend any money on anything.
Yeah. By the 80s, there weren't that many. I know back in the 60s and 70s, they had to dance every Friday and Saturday night. But by the 80s, that had pretty much died down.
So you were going to people's anniversary parties. All right.
Pretty much.
Yeah, Bob, thank you so much for calling. And Leo Landis is here with us. He's the curator of the State Historical Museum. Leo, we need to talk about ballrooms because Iowa had so many just amazing, beautiful ballrooms all over the countryside. And they were really a gathering place for many decades, right?
I think Bob hits on a good point there just on how they transitioned to in the small towns where, in the 50s and 60s, you might bring in somebody like a big band member like Les Brown or something to a community because he was on a tour and playing. And then as rock music became more and more popular, you start to see bands. And we all know the Buddy Holly and Big Bopper story up at the Surf with events like that, how the ballrooms transition from being catering to adults to, again, catering to that teen car culture that's able to participate in events like that. And then you start getting to events like the Wadena Rock Festival in 1970, the development of then larger venues like Hilton Coliseum or the Field House at University of Iowa, to then the Unidome and other events.
Well, and there was also a transition from, when the big band was playing, whether it was a regional band or a big name coming in, you went to dance. And when did it transition to you went to sit and listen or stand and listen?
That really did happen in the mid-60s as big band music and the generation that was supporting big band music. I mean, you still saw even people like Lawrence Welk, who had, band member Dick Dale from Algona remaining popular in the state into the 1970s and 80s. But those big bands of the 50s and 60s that had started in the 40s really by 1965 have lost their popular appeal. And it really is the rock music that comes in. And as you said, Charity, you sit and listen or dance and listen in a teen culture kind of way as opposed to a formal big band way.
Well, and of course, teenagers have always been sort of in this nether region because they couldn't go to bars. And bars are a place where, of course, a lot of music takes place, a lot of dancing takes place. When I was a teenager in the early 90s, that was when rave culture made it to Iowa. So we'd go dancing in an empty warehouse, which a lot of people did.
And a little bit of that happened in the 80s, too. We just didn't call them raves. And the thing that transitioned a little bit, and it's, I think, made our culture a better culture, was the drinking age, at least from the early 70s to the early 80s, was 18. So high schoolers, in some ways, had greater access to at least beer in culture. And so in larger towns like Des Moines, you had in the disco scene era, you had a place like Uncle Sam's that was a mix of Drake students and a mix of Central Iowa high school students. So that was a bit of a short-lived period. But when the drinking age was 18 across the state, you had a little bit more alcohol consumption, I think, by teenagers.
Well, and maybe just a little more mixing of the age groups as well, because they had a place where they could go. Now, I also remember, and a lot of people my age have stories about their town trying to start a teen club to make it a cool place to go on Friday or Saturday night. And I think every single one of those failed. Teenagers did not want to go to teen clubs.
It's that idea of having structure put around your fun, I think, that really was why they were destined to fail. I agree with you on that.
All right. We have a lot of people who want to share their memories on the line. 866-780-9100. A lot of roller rink memories here. Here's Don from Ankeny. Hi, Don.
Hello.
Hi. What's your memory? Don, are you there? Oh.
I was kind of surprised. I was at Iowa State in the early 70s, and we would go over, we drive to Ogden to go roller skating. I don't know if the Ames roller rink was out of business by that time, but it kind of impressed me that a small town was still going with their roller rink.
season.
Well, Don, you and I were probably at that roller rink at the same time, but I was much smaller.
It was a real nice, it was a short drive, and we would call up another one of the women's houses on campus, and everybody would haul over there in their cars and skate for a day and call it good.
Well, Don, thank you so much for sharing. And I suppose now when I was a kid, also a lot of kids, I was in Ogden when I was really little, but then I spent most of my childhood in Cedar Falls. And Cedar Falls was the big city in the area. So a lot of kids from the smaller communities would come in to Cedar Falls on a Friday or Saturday night, and we would see them out on University Avenue, or we'd see them at the mall if we went to the mall. That's also a big part of this Friday or Saturday night, is sort of the mixing of people from different communities, Leo.
Certainly, when you had mall culture developing then, that led to a demise to a degree of some of those small towns that we were talking about earlier. And, you know, if you were up in Dubuque area, lived in a town like Dyersville, you might go into Kennedy Mall at Dubuque or Crossroads Mall in Cedar Rapids. And in Des Moines, it was a little bit of that transition from places like Merle Hay that had developed as an open-air mall in the 60s then to the rise of suburbia that also happens. And you get places like Valley West Mall in the 70s and today Jordan Creek Mall, and where, you know, if you're in town for the state basketball tournament or the state wrestling tournament, that's where those malls become magnets for people all across the state.
Tom is on the line next from Morrison, Illinois. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
When I grew up, it was in Peterson, Iowa, a small town, 350 people. And we, during the summer, we used to go to the pool. And then after, when it came time to go play baseball, we'd get dressed, walk over to the ball diamond. But when I was in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, we would go to the school would organize going to the skate rink twice a year, and it would take every student, and they'd basically buy out the skate rink for that night. And that was pretty cool. And then in the fall, with basketball and that, we'd have school dances in the gymnasium.
Well, good memories. Tom, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Mary Ann's on next from Algona. Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi.
Hi. You have another skating rink memory, right?
Yes. When I was in 8th grade through 10th grade, I lived in Grettinger, and there were 9 of us girls that were very good friends. And every Sunday night, almost every Sunday night, all year long, one parent would crowd 9 girls, their skate boxes, and the 2 parents into just a regular vehicle, not a van. I don't know how we all got in, but we did. And they would take us from Grettinger to Emmitsburg to the skating rink. And we would just have a wonderful evening skating. Some of us met our first boyfriends there. It was just a fun time. We learned a two-step and a waltz and all those things on skates. Great memories.
Oh, Mary Ann, thank you so much for sharing. This makes
You're
me
welcome.
Want to go to a roller rink this weekend, but I won't quite have quite as much luck as I would 30 years ago or 40 years ago. We have a tweet about drive-in movies that I think is particularly telling about the culture of the drive-in movie. This one's from Morton. He said, I have really fond memories of drive-ins, but not fond memories of the movies because you can't really hear and you can barely see them. That wasn't what it was about. It wasn't about watching great cinema, was it?
No doubt about it. And especially as drive-in started to get a little more out of the mainstream, you'd see things, not that they were out of the mainstream, but I remember in central Iowa, you'd see things like when the Planet of the Apes series came out, you would have Planet of the Apes running from dusk to dawn. So they would run 4 solid movies, so 8 hours of movies from 8 o'clock at night till 4 in the morning.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right, James is on the line in Mason City. Hi, James.
Good morning. Say, you really touched a good subject here with me this morning. And I'm 65 years old, but grew up in Rockwell Swaledale, and we come to Mason City, and there was an A&W drive-in there that had the frosty glass mugs, you know,
oh,
with
yeah.
root beer, you know. And then on the north end was Hassie's, and that was another, the same as A&W. So we could cruise to the north end, turn around, come back to the A&W. And we had, in those days, we had our 55, 56 Chevys. We thought we were cool, so they had a big front bumper on them. And so you always took the front bumper off so they looked customized. You know, they look great, you know, with just the grill and the splash pan. So you took the, you'd cruise up and down Main. Well, today there's a big Southbridge Mall in Mason City, so that's ruined all that. And the mall was not successful. It's empty now, almost. And so it, but that was the days. We'd cruise back, and in those days, you could go to the junkyard and buy a, you could buy a 55 Chevy for $50, put a battery in it, and drive it out of there. and those cars are worth $100,000.
Right, right. Oh, James, thanks so much for calling.
But anyway, we'd go to that drive-in that you talked about out at Mason City, west of Mason City. We'd go to the drive-in. And it was a great theater out there. And we, like I said, we'd park with our 50s cars and everything. And he had the speaker that you could put in the left window there and listen to the audio of the movie, you know. And it was kind of a deal. I hope I can say this. But it, if you scored with your girlfriend, you'd honk your horn.
James, thanks a lot for calling and sharing. I'll bet some people honk their horns anyway. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. Betty is on the line from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Betty.
Hi, Charity.
Hi, and you have some ballroom memories, right?
Well, yes, I do. I live in Cedar Rapids now, but I grew up in Victor, Iowa, and throughout the summer in high school in the 50s, we went to a little town called Deep River, Iowa, that had an outdoors pavilion, about the size of a little parking lot now, but it seemed huge, and we had great music, Don Hoy, among others, I recall. But then in the winter months, we went to Armar Ballroom and Danceline Ballroom in Cedar Rapids, and that's where Armar was, where we saw all the big bands.
And I'm sure met a lot of people, too.
Met a lot of people, yes, and those were special occasions. Yeah, Les Elgart and Ray Anthony and
wow.
and Harry James, and all of them. It was wonderful.
Oh, Betty, thank you so much for calling.
Okay, thank you for listening to me.
Oh, thanks a lot. And Leo, we're nearly out of time. We haven't talked a lot about Friday and Saturday nights now, but it is interesting how much of this culture, although the drive-in theaters have closed and the drive-in restaurants, most of them have closed as well, but a lot of the elements of the culture have remained the same in Iowa.
There's still the, you know, the teens that do have their driver's licenses and hanging out, and whether it be, you know, just cruising around the countryside if you live in a small town, or going to the mall, those are still places, or hanging at a movie with friends. Those are still things that persist. And every now and then you can find a roller rink, too, or a drive-in.
Well, and it's interesting, so many of the memories that people have shared this hour, of course, revolve around summertime activities. I think in memory, summer feels a lot longer than it does when you're actually living it.
I agree.
Now, with some of the collections that you have at the State Historical Museum, obviously you have mementos from a lot of these places around the state of Iowa. Is there something that holds a particular place in your heart that you have in your collection?
You know, we've got some really great drive-in movie collections, and it's a paper artifact, but there's a really great collector from North Central Iowa, Craig Benabus, who put together a good drive-in collection for us for our Hollywood in the Heartland exhibit. He had a poster from the drive-in that I grew up near on Highway 6. It was about 500 yards from our house, and my mom didn't drive, so our dad would drop us off and then tell the people at the gate that he was walking home, and my mom had to call him to pick us up. So that's one of my favorite artifacts.
Oh, Leo, thank you so much for being here today.
Yes, thank you, Charity.
Well, we've been talking about Iowa all week long, different aspects of culture in Iowa then and now. With me today, Leo Landis, the curator of the State Historical Museum. We've been talking about Iowa on the weekends then and now. And if you've missed any of the shows this week, you are welcome to go to our website, iowapublicradio.org. We have a whole page devoted to Iowa Week, and so you can revisit some of the topics that we've been talking about all week long. Coming up today on River to River at noon, we're going to talk about conservation issues, in particular, water quality, then and now. Thank you for a great Iowa week and have a great weekend. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa. That tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good, good night. I feel it. That tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good, good night. I feel it. Ooh, that tonight's gonna be.